We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. And Jack, we got a big win for the Nets, 147-125 over OKC with no KD. Offensive explosion. How you feeling, Jack?
Scary hours without the Slim Reaper.
Yeah, I mean, this was, I think the Nets tied their franchise record for points in regulation, 147. Pretty close to hitting 150 tonight. One more Reggie Perry three and we would have been there. But before we jump into this, as always, you can find us on all streaming platforms, including OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But, Jack, you kind of mentioned to me before we started the show, a really comfortable win tonight. You know, not much stress on the Nets side.
Yeah, there was a point where, you know, TLC gave us that little bit of extra wiggle room in the fourth quarter. He hits a couple of back-to-back threes, and it's just like, TLC is the savior that Nets fans deserve sometimes, it seems. I thought that it was just a good team performance across the board, Nick, led by, you know, our two backcourt superstars, the best backcourt in the league, the two starting all-star in the Eastern Conference, and if they're not, then we will riot like Joe Harris when he wasn't named in the three-point shooting contest, and then he ends up winning it, but... it was an incredible performance in the absence of Kevin Durant and James Harden with another triple-double. Kyrie Irving, you know, throwing out shots that I haven't even... I can't even actually envision in my head. I don't have the creativity, dexterity, and imagination that Kyrie Irving does. Like, I'm just like, I'm going to try to just make a shot here. And Kyrie Irving's just having fun here. Like, I put out on Twitter, I'm just like, he's a joy. He's a joyous basketball player. He brings that energy. And in return, as fans, we have a joy just watching him.
Yeah, I mean, he has a counter for every defense. Like, whatever, you're going to put your arm up right to try to push a shot, he's going to go inside and under. And like you said, there was just so many moves tonight from Kyrie where you're just like, what? How did you shoot 10 of 16? Like, you shot over 60% from the field. Like, that doesn't even make sense.
I have no idea. Like, I literally don't know. There was... The two shots that stuck out to me, Nick, is the one that you chucked, you probably put them both on, but the one that I responded to on Twitter, or retweeted on Twitter, where he goes up under, it was good defense, was it Dort or was it Diallo?
I think it was SGA.
SGA, sorry, really good defense, and SGA isn't a great defender, but he just forces Kyrie kiss off the glass, and I think that there are... few players probably in the NBA that use the backboard better than Kyrie Irving does. Like, it's insane how well he reads angles. Like, in trigonometry back in high school, guaranteed that dude was getting hundreds and A pluses because he just knows how to read everything. And it's just like, every single shot off the glass goes in for Kyrie Irving. I'm not kidding. I can't remember a shot that didn't go in.
Yeah, it's really crazy. And like you said, that one was just like such nice touch. It kind of almost makes me think of Poole. You know, like, you have to hit the ball at a certain angle. It's like he's a master of angles because, like, the way he used glass doesn't even really, like, make sense for a lot of players. And like you said, not many guys in the league do. It's more of kind of an old school thing. And just, I guess, to talk about his full stat line, 25 points, 10 of 16 from the field. You know, only three threes tonight, one of three, four free throws, seven assists and five rebounds. Just a really, really efficient game from Kyrie.
Yeah, truly. He's one of the most efficient guards in the NBA today, Nick. And... Kendrick Perkins thinks he should be traded for JJ Redick, and then he puts him in his all-star starting team. I don't know. I'm sorry that I had to give that dude some clout on our podcast. I refuse to ever bear his name again. He'll be like Voldemort, who shall not be named. I'll refer to him as going forward. But yeah, Kyrie Irving is just otherworldly, Nicholas. I can't say enough. Insanely, and you mentioned to me earlier, like, it just doesn't get old. It's just like, I still marvel at his creativity, at his just shot-making ability that I just don't know how he does it. Like, it bewilders me. And it's just a joy and awesome to have him as a Brooklyn Nets player.
It's just like something great to have in your back pocket, because a lot of it isn't even just easy offense. You know what I mean? Kyrie can be part of the offense at different times, run pick and roll, get good shots and stuff like that. But hey, shot clock's going down. It's under 5 seconds. Throw the ball to Kyrie. He'll probably get a shot that he can hit. But talking about the other all-star mate in the backcourt, James Harden tonight, another really good game, triple-double.
What is power forward, though, Nick? Isn't he the power forward? He's on the backcourt, is he?
Oh, yeah, he really was the power forward in the starting lineup. So I guess not. Maybe that's going to mess with the all-star voting. But another triple-double tonight, 25 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds, 9 of 14. What is this efficiency?
Look, I think that I've said it on Twitter, and I'll say it again. Ever since Bruce Brown said we need James Harden to be, you know, the James Harden that we know and love, and Bruce Brown knows everything about locking down James Harden, he has literally unlocked this version of James Harden that is the great offensive player in the past decade or so, well, 5 to 8 years in Houston. And another triple double for him.
Fitting in an offense, Jack. He's not really playing James Harden basketball. Like, he looks like a normal basketball player. And I know that was like one of the biggest concerns with the trade for not just the Nets, for Philadelphia, or any team that traded for him. Like, can he go back to normal basketball habits? And you wouldn't even think that was a question the way he's played in Brooklyn.
No, it's 3 triple-doubles in 8 games. And I guess we sort of talked about that. We felt confident in James Harden filling himself out. He was confident himself. Yep. Are you surprised, Nick? It seems to me that obviously without Kevin Durant, there's going to be less shots as well when he returns, hopefully against Washington in a couple of days. But are you comfortable now with James Harden and his role? And did you expect it to be such a quick acclimation in only 8, you know, on-court performances?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably say it's a little quicker than I thought. I thought there would probably be a little bit more disruption with the offense, just, you know, kind of what we saw in the first two games, you know, 8 turnovers, 9 turnovers or whatever it was, just not really efficient basketball. But he's starting to get a good feel for his teammates. And I think also just like having a lot of high basketball IQ guys has really helped too. So the fit's probably gone smoother than I expected. And like you said, we were pretty optimistic about it, but I was just concerned it was going to take a little bit of time. And it really is looking good. And James Harden is really feeling out his teammates and has a great feel for what to expect. And I think this offense is probably still only at like 50%.
It's insane. I thought that this was obviously the best offensive game we saw all season. I think OKC are a better team than we did see tonight. And, you know, they've beaten us this season, haven't they, Nick?
Yeah, I think what it was is, like, this is kind of the extremes for OKC. They shot, to the highest extreme in the first game. Like, Diallo was making every shot. Tonight, he really couldn't hit anything. You had guys like Bazley cooking from three. SGA couldn't miss in that game. I mean, SGA only took 10 shots tonight. But, like, and then tonight, you saw a lot of those guys miss. Or Lu Dort, for example, 2 of 14, 1 of 9. So I think it was just kind of like you got both ends of the spectrum on OKC shooting.
Yeah, I thought that the Nets also did do a good job defensively. Yep. I thought that the switching, you mentioned there was a little bit of zone. You know, outside of DeAndre Jordan, I thought all performance, including, you know, Landry Shamet, maybe not TLC, but in saying that, you know, the majority of the guys who played some meaningful minutes were solid on their switches, were quick on them. Kyrie at times, you know, can give away a little bit. He can be a little bit slow, some of his turnovers occasionally. But I thought overall, the unit as a whole played really good defense, and the scheme is starting to solidify, and there's finding a little bit of synergy there.
Yeah, I thought this was probably the highest percentage of good defensive possessions we've seen in a game from the Nets. I'm not sure what that exact number is, but like you said, there were some really good plays. I thought they even forced turnovers tonight, and that's something we've been kind of looking for them to do. Only 7 steals, but still not a bad number in comparison to what we saw like a few nights ago. It was 0. So I think kind of it helps them get in transition a little bit. And I think communication was pretty crispy. You know, there was a couple plays with DJ that weren't great and a couple other ones. But overall, I think there was some real progress defensively. Obviously, it's easier going up against a less offensively talented team. I think OKC's like 28th in offensive rating. But still, you're going to take any type of progress you can get. And confidence, I think, can be built on that end of the floor, too.
No, that's a good point. You know, generally we've seen the Nets lift their standards to the better teams and drop their standards to the sub 500 teams. So it was good to sort of see, you know, that sort of blowout and get some confidence against a team that they should be getting some confidence against. And, you know, even without their best player in saying that as well. So I thought it was positive steps on the defensive side of the floor. That's for sure, Nick. You know, they were doing all the little things, rebounding the ball well. Now, I thought the communication was good. I thought we've said before that we thought that a lot of the time the Brooklyn Nets allow teams easier shots than they should get. Whereas I thought tonight they forced them into tougher shots. They forced OKC into tougher shots than I think that they thought they were a bit of an easier time, like in the previous win that they had against us. So it's good to see that the Nets are making things tough for their opponent, and hopefully that is a consistent trend going forward.
Yeah, I thought there was more effort on closeouts tonight. I think that's something you see, you know what I mean? And that can really alter a shot, because when you're giving them the complete wide open shot, it's very comfortable and almost relaxing to an extent. But when you're just running at them and you're putting your hand right in their face, you know, something that Kyrie, James Harden really do, because I'm sure tons of guys have done that to them. And I feel like that's just some of those extra effort plays we saw tonight that we weren't necessarily getting, or finished rotations. And also shout out to Joe Harris. I thought he was really good defensively tonight too, willing to make some of those deep rotations, especially against like Al Horford at the rim.
Yeah, I mean, ever since that Trae Young performance that we chatted about a little bit the other night, and where he was just hounding dudes and making Trae Young look like absolute garbage out there. Yeah, I think that because the OKC Thunder, obviously you alluded to the lack of offensive talent, and I think that also does include from the perimeter. You know, they don't have a JJ Redick, they don't have a Joe Harris, a Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, freaking Maladon, though, didn't miss a damn three tonight.
Yeah, he's in like his that dude's scouting report. You know, the three pointer is a weakness of his. So sometimes you're just gonna get hot. Yep. That's basketball at the end of the day. And you know, you want to leave certain guys open. And Maladon probably in the scouting report is the guy you'll leave open. You know, a Pokuševski or whatever. So there's gonna be guys that get hot.
Pokuševski, man, I don't know if I've ever seen that guy like come close to making a three.
Look, he's a work in progress. But we'll keep on the positive. So I just thought that despite the fact that they did shoot 42% from the area, I think a lot of that was just some hot shooting. You know, Darius Baisley going 2 of 5. You know, Al Horford, when was the last time Al Horford hit 4 threes in a game? You know, maybe get straight. Maybe trying to get traded to the Brooklyn Nets for Spencer Dinwiddie and Al Horford. I've heard on other podcasts. I'm not sure about that one, but he's certainly exceeding his trade value in some regard. But yeah, I thought that the Nets defense, you know, despite the outlier in the shooting was really good. And, you know, their ability to, I thought early in the first half, probably more so, I was a little bit worried about the habit of giving away too many fouls and bailing them out. I think they had like 10 free throws in the first quarter, something like that. And that's just easy points. And the Nets were still up 36-27. And I thought that they deserved to be up by double digits. So I think they did tune that in a little bit, and I'm not sure. Let me see how many they finished with in terms of free throws for the entire game.
34 for OKC.
So, yeah, that is a lot. That is a lot. But in saying that, if you turn that into like something more reasonable, like 20, you know, the Nets blow them out even more. 147-125, it seems to me that's going to be emblematic, hopefully, of the Brooklyn Nets going forward. But, yeah, I thought that there were some good signs defensively, despite all that.
Yeah, 100%. And I think obviously, you know, everything was just kind of running smoothly, offensively, defensively, and you can kind of feel the synergy on both ends of the floor. And like we kind of talked about, some of the lineup combinations I thought were really nice from Steve Nash tonight, especially not having Kevin Durant.
Definitely. I thought that there was some nice creativity. We got some extra juice from Landry Shamet, some TLC moments here and there. Just before we do move on to some of the depth rotation guys, Nick, 25 fouls to 12 in favor of OKC. So double the amount of that. So that is certainly a trend that I would like to be rectifying going forward. But yeah, the depth rotation guys, you know, Reggie Perry, I think this is a good matchup for him against, you know, a young team like the OKC Thunder. You know, he's not going to be out against the Philadelphia 76ers or the Miami Heat or these sort of teams. But against a team that is young and has young bigs of their own, I think Reggie Perry can provide something. And I thought that his energy, his hustle on the glass, his tenacity, his aggression, I thought he was quite good tonight.
Yeah, first career double-double tonight. You know, 10 and 11, you know, 10 points, 11 rebounds. And like you said, I think this is the perfect matchup for him, because literally all of OKC's backups are young bigs. Like going against Al Horford might have been tough for him, but going against like Mike Muscala or Roby, like there are matchups that Reggie Perry can win. And you saw him, I think, get a little bit more comfortable under the rim and kind of understanding what he needs to do. Like when he had the one play where he put his shoulder into Mike Muscala's chest and then went up and got him, he hit him with a pump fake too. Like that's what he has to do because he's undersized, but he is a strong dude and he's got some big shoulders. Just use him.
Yeah, he seems comfortable around the rim. He looked more comfortable tonight than he has in a lot of games this season. Yeah, probably other than the Knicks game. This was probably his best performance. And in only 19 minutes as well. You know, I think he got a bit unlucky with some of his fouls. I thought that some of them were a little bit ticky-tacky. I thought he was vertical on some of them. And I do also think that Kyrie Irving and James Harden did a good job of finding him. You know, in the pick and roll, and he also made good decisions in kicking it out, and I thought that it really helped the offense because there was the defense blitzed, I think, James Harden, and it left Reggie Perry wide open for a layup down low or a dunk up, whichever one he finished with. So I think that he's going to get those looks if he's playing in the second unit with Kai or James, and those guys are going to be out there with the second unit because we need their offense. So I thought that this was a good sign for him, and we could see him against these sort of teams that are struggling a little bit and have better matchups like a Washington, like an OKC, those sort of teams that I think he can actually give us something.
I also like the way James Harden and Kyrie coach him, you know, especially after fouls and stuff. Kyrie was kind of letting him know, like, hey, man, you're a big, you got to keep your hands up. And I think that's some of the reasons that he's not getting the calls is, you know, poor positioning, not showing his hands, and also just being a rookie. Like, we know that's how it goes. Like, you're more likely to get a call against you when you're a rook. But I thought, like you said, Jack, there was some nice progress tonight, and hopefully he can take this moving forward and be a nice piece on the bench. You know, like you said, too, he's not going to perform against some of the elite teams, but in some of these matchups, you know, take advantage of the minutes while you can.
Absolutely.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Absolutely. Nick, we'll stick with the bench because we're on that sort of wavelength right now. We'll get to Bruce. We'll get to Joe. Don't worry. We never forget about Bruce and Joe on the Brooklyn Buzz. But who were you more encouraged about tonight? Was it TLC or was it Landry Shamet?
Landry Shamet, for sure. I mean, seeing him hit a couple threes and bring something to the offense, and when he's hitting, he provides gravity. And like I mentioned to you on before we hopped on, I really like the combination of Landry Shamet, Joe Harris, and James Harden together. It kind of gives James Harden the space to operate and kind of get downhill a little bit. And if they're going to commit to him on a pick and roll or whoever it might be, Landry Shamet open three, Joe Harris open three. And if they're both hitting, that's just like an offensive explosion where your second unit is now extending your lead instead of just trying to maintain it.
Yeah, and I thought that it was good to see maybe one of my favorite moments of the night was when Landry Shamet, hit that opening three and the bench erupted. It seems to me that this team is really starting to gel, and there's a real camaraderie to them. And I thought that was awesome, and it gave him a lot of confidence. At least it seemed that way because he did finish tonight and was a positive effect on the game. You know, in 18 minutes, 4 of 8 from the field, an awesome drive from him as well, 3 of 7 from 3, 11 points, did have a dime too. That drive, Nick, was really savvy. You know, he had the three in the corner, but the closeout was good from the OKC defender. And he's like, you know what? I want to attack this dude. And he finished with the lefty. It was really crafty.
Yeah, I mean, I think he just needs to get comfortable on the floor. You know what I mean? And I think he does have some skill and he can attack the closeouts. We talked about the point guard background, some of the playmaking. We don't necessarily want him to be a playmaker for the Nets, but when the opportunity arises for him, go out there and make some plays. But really with Shamet, it all comes down to making his threes. And then the rest of his game comes because he knows that's his bread and butter. And when he's not knocking down his threes, I think it's just hard for him to have a positive impact in the game. He's not Joe Harris. Maybe he can start to kind of turn into that player down the line, but you know, he could be a guy that's kind of a little bit more three-point dependent, and that's okay. There's plenty of guys like that in the league.
Yeah, it's his bread, it's his butter, it's all the topping on the sandwich for him. there's no doubt about that. And I think Landry Shamet might be more important than TLC in a lot of respects because the Nets are so offensively predicated that if he can get himself going, it gives them a guy in the rotation that they can trust. And we've sort of spoken about, like, who are these guys in the rotation? The Nets have 5, 6, 7 guys. Can Landry Shamet force his way in there? We've seen him do it for basically every single other team that he's been on. And obviously, he is finding a new role within this team. And, you know, in limited minutes, it is hard. And, you know, with the fluctuating superstars here, superstars there, and I'm really hoping that this is a kickstart for him for a nice little run against some teams, and he keeps hitting that three ball, he keeps making nice decisions. Steve Nash noted his defense tonight. I also thought his defense was quite good too. I thought he was quick on switches. I thought he showed some strength and some tenacity there. So all good things for Landry Shamet. We're big fans of him.
Yeah, and like you said, Jack, I think he can really complement the stars. Elite three-point shooting is exactly what you want. You're putting him out with some lineup, so see what happens with him. He can improve that defense. And it almost kind of felt like him knocking down his threes pushed TLC a little bit. I don't know. TLC didn't knock any threes down, it felt like. And then all of a sudden, you know, Shamet's getting cooking. TLC's like, hey, I need my minutes.
I think all of these backup, Reggie Perry, TLC, Landry Shamet, know that there's a guy coming in on the horizon. Whoever it is, whether it's a big, whether it's a wing, whether it's a guard, is probably going to be looking for one of those guys' minutes. But yeah, TLC, look, it's the TLC experience. I think overall, like, plus 22. Yeah, look, he was overall a positive. 13 yep. points, 5 boards, 3 assists, had a steal, 4 of 8 from 3, including a dagger to sort of give them that nice little comfortable buffer above 20 points. But at the same time, there were 2 fouls that he gave away on SGA, closing out a jump shot and then sticking out the leg at the end of the quarter, where it's just like, dude, like, that's just the basic defense stuff. That's basically one-on-one defense. You don't bail out the guy. And, you know, I alluded to 25 to 12 in the fouls. You know, TLC himself had 4 in 20 minutes.
Yeah, and I mean, this is an issue he had when he initially came up. You know, it was very foul-prone, started to clean it up, but he's starting to get back to some of those bad habits. And I feel like we've talked about TLC closeouts more consistently on this podcast than maybe anything else.
I've got called out on Twitter for it. It seems to be like a running joke that we've started on this podcast, but I mean, everyone sees it. If you're a person that watches Brooklyn Nets basketball, TLC closing out, it's not just a joke. It's what he does.
Yeah, and I think, like we've kind of talked about, he tries to go directly in the center of the body instead of kind of running past players. And I think it's also just like he has a hard time reading if they're actually going to shoot or if they're going to drive. You know what I mean? So his closeout, I think, is kind of – I think he just doesn't necessarily have the instinct there.
Yeah, I don't think he – like, say, if – like, let's compare, say, Joe Harris, who will close out, and he closed out hard. And if the guy, you know, dribbles on him and hits a three or dribbles on him and drives, he trusts the help behind him. And yep. He's not going to be like, all right, this guy hits it's a dribble three off my closeout. That's a good shot. I've forced the tough make there. Whereas TLC just bails them out. And I think that, you know.
And you mentioned the one on SGA where he kind of hit him in the air after he already shot. Like, he already played great defense on the play and he kind of overextended for what? Like, that, if he hits the shot, you just kind of be like, you know what? Good shot, man.
Yeah, exactly. So, look, it seems like an easy fix, but it's been happening for 21 games. So hopefully it gets remedied sooner rather than later because, you know, they're little things that are certainly not championship habits, as we sort of like to mention quite a bit on this podcast, Nick. But Uncle Jeff continues to do Uncle Jeff things. Like, again, evergreen content we're going to be providing you about Jeff Green. He plays solid basketball. He hits a three ball. He gets to the line. He hits some shots. He rebounds well. 3 steals as well to go with the 3 assists. Jeff Green just ever reliable against the former team. Well, he didn't play for OKC. I think he only played for Seattle. But
he was still technically part, I think, of the roster. But
yeah.
But like you said, Jack, I mean, I think this might be one of the most consistent stretches of Jeff Green's career. like in terms of the role that he's asked of. And like, you know, he's functioned a lot in the past. I think last year with Houston, that short stint, he was really good. But other times he's kind of been hot and cold. But he's been pretty consistent for the Nets. And I really liked when he came in the game and he went straight at Roby and hit him with a power move, like that little like switch over and going straight to the rim. You know, I think I like the fact that Jeff Green isn't completely dependent on his three-point shot. He'll switch it up with some drives occasionally. And I think defensively, he's really willing to guard anybody on the floor.
And he can, like, he's showing capabilities there. And look, you can look at it from one or two ways. You can go, look, Jeff Green is so important to this team and the value that he provides is awesome. But you can also look like, okay, we're relying this much on Jeff Green. And I think that it's somewhere in the middle. The Nets definitely do need guys to the support players, the role players to support him going forward. And Steve Nash said himself to Chris Mulholland and the Nets media that he was monitoring Jeff Green's minutes tonight, that if he started, Green probably would have seen 35 plus. And Jeff Green, Joe Harris, two of our consistent role players, are playing elevated minutes alongside the superstars. We talk a lot about, you know, James Harden and Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving playing elevated minutes in OT games and such. But, you know, our role players are playing elevated minutes too, so it's their conditioning we need to continue to monitor and worry about, especially a guy like Jeff Green who is in the twilight of his career. You know, he's in his mid-30s, and I think he's playing awesome basketball for the Nets, and he is so damn important, especially in the absence of Kevin Durant, because we needed, you know, we need an actual forward. we needed a forward. It was as much as the starting five might have said so from the Brooklyn Nets media team, James Harden ain't a power forward. He might guard him sometimes, but I don't know. Out of him, Bruce Brown, and Joe Harris, maybe James Harden is the best power forward out of those three. I have no idea, but yeah, Jeff Green, ever reliable, like you mentioned, Nick. I think his driving capabilities, he just knows how to make plays, and he knows when to drive. James Harden have a really nice synergy in the open court too. Seems to me at least once every game, if not every two games, you know, he finds him in transition to going downhill for a layup. He's doing just all the right things.
Yeah, and I mean, the one play that sticks out, I know you comment on this play, I think you said it was your favorite set. They ran the pick and pop up top with Joe Harris and James Harden. Joe Harris hits him with a pump fake, drives to the rim, hits Jeff Green in the dunker spot, boom. And he hit him with a pump fake and got the and one. It's just, he's a very smart basketball player, and he looks really comfortable out there. Obviously, having all that experience in the NBA is going to do that for you. But like you mentioned, Jack, Jeff Green playing a ton of minutes, Joe Harris, the stars. I think that's just kind of the issue of not having a full roster right now. And, you know, obviously some of that's on Sean Marks, but he did say he wanted to take a patient approach. Just hopefully it doesn't hurt the Nets in the long run in any way. But games like this really are important because you get that extra rest for your team. And that's what we want to see from the Nets moving forward against some of these lesser teams.
Yep, in-game rest. And, you know, only 34 minutes for Kyrie Irving, 32 minutes for James Harden. I think that that's perfectly fine.
Yep. You know, we've sounds seen like Kenny Atkinson.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Kyrie would have played more than 32. I remember when we were analyzing the roster who had the most minutes per game. And I think it was like Joe Harris at 31 at one point. And I think that our guys, you know, the superstars know how to play those minutes. And it's good to get those in-game rest because, you know, that's what the true superstar teams do. They blow out teams in the first three quarters and they get some rest in the latter points of the game. Golden State did it so damn consistently that they were so damn primed for their 16-game series in the playoffs.
Playing three-quarter games.
Yeah, basically. And the Nets basically did as well tonight. There are a couple of little moments here and there, but they did outscore.
That's when you really got to get to 30. If you get to 30, then you can sit your starters for the fourth quarter. And I think that's kind of the next step for the Nets, because there was opportunities in this game where I think they could have really clamped it down, but they gave OKC some runs, especially I want to say at the end of the second quarter. You know, they had a couple errors in there. You mentioned some of the TLC fouls, and then they had the play where Kyrie thought they were going to roll it, and they didn't. They just ended up going out of bounds. You know, those type of plays are just the type of things you got to clean up.
Yeah, definitely. And then, and alluding to the Jeff Green stuff where he was in the dunker spot or driving, it's sort of is emblematic of this stat. The Nets got 70 points in the paint and they only allowed 38 themselves. And obviously OKC don't have the talent to really, other than SGA, to make dribble penetration moves. But the Brooklyn Nets have a lot of guys that can do that. And I was alluding to, you know, Landry Shamet doing it earlier. TLC occasionally can do it, but every other player basically on the roster can do it, whether it's Bruce Brown, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Joe Harris. All of those guys can make a play for themselves off the dribble. So I think that that's the stat that I want to continue to see going forward. Probably more so the 38 points from OKC. It's going to be tough to sort of protect the paint that well. And it's a balance. It certainly is a balance. But I thought that was a really, really good sign. And it allowed the Nets to really sort of play in and out of basketball. And I think that that's where you force the defense to make tough decisions. You know, what shot am I going to give them? You know, it's going to turn a good shot into a great shot.
Yeah, and I think, like, the Nets really didn't shoot a ton of mid-range shots today. You know, even the Kyrie shots, they were almost, like, closer to, like, close-range shots.
Yeah,
like
he 10 to 11, 12 feet rather than, like, 12 to 18 feet.
He loves underneath the free throw line. Like, I almost feel like he doesn't miss that shot. Like, I want to say in my head he's hit it, like, the last 8 times I've seen him take it. It's kind of ridiculous, his touch inside. But like you said, Jack, getting in the paint is so important because then you're not necessarily depending on a three-point shot. It's more so complementing your inside game. And I felt like that's what the Nets did tonight. They got to the rim a little bit. Oh, okay, so he's going to send extra help. We got the three-point shooters that can handle it. And Joe Harris was cooking from deep.
It makes up, surely we can discount the fact that the streak ended because he made 5 of them tonight, Nick. Surely that makes up for it and should make that streak now. The new
Don't
streak
you think starts. That just makes him so mad, though? Like,
It probably does, to be honest. And look, it begun quite early, and he set the tone quite early from the perimeter. And, you know, he hit some tough threes tonight as well. And he was just like, this ain't happening 2 nights in a row. And he's one of the best three-point shooters in the league. His drive and finish with the left was incredible, incredible strength and dexterity. It looked like James Harden with the left in a lot of respects. So great game from him. 20 points, 5 of 9 from 3, 7 of 13 from the field, couple of steals, couple of dimes, and a board as well. Joe Harris is, he's even in the performance against the Atlanta Hawks, Nick, we saw him, you know, chewing that gum on the sideline and getting his fist bump going. Ultimate consummate teammate. I said some inappropriate things about the chewing gum, but in saying that, Joe Harris did a lot of things that made me feel inappropriate tonight, because Joey Buckets can do no wrong. And he's had such a damn consistent season. I don't think he's had a bad game, one out of the 21.
Yeah, there was like one game I think we talked about, but the pump fake and sidestep tonight, that was looking very comfortable. And I think like that's the next step for Joe as a three-point shooter too, is like he doesn't always have to drive because sometimes the lane's not going to be there, but that sidestep three or that step back or whatever it is, and you mentioned some of the deeper threes, and this is the perfect performance. You know, your best player's out, you need someone to step up in the scoring department, you get 20 from Joe. You know, it's like you had a big three scores over 20. That's what you usually need to win games, like pretty easily, especially with the Nets defense. So shout out to Joe stepping up, hitting big shots, and take advantage of the opportunity. And like I kind of said to you before, like I feel like Joe was able to escape a little bit more in this game in comparison to some of the better teams and take advantage of those shots because they're going to be hard to come by all season.
Definitely. I thought the ball movement and player movement did allow that as well. And I thought that was from him. That was also from, you know, James Harden and Kyrie Irving, because they were driving, they were creating open spots for Joe, for Jeff, for Bruce, for all these sort of guys. And I thought all of them, TLC occasionally got in the way of Kyrie Irving and some of his drives, and James Harden maybe once or twice too. But everyone else had the smarts to be like, you know what? All right, Bruce Brown, I'm going to get down low, but I'm not going to get in the guy's way because I know that, you know, I feast down low, but I also want to give the James Harden the space to drive and penetrate and throw some lobs and get some and one plays. So yeah, Joe was awesome tonight. And all 9 guys who played key minutes for the Nets tonight, Nick, finished in double digits. It shows that it was a really, really good team performance across the board. And Bruce Brown tonight, 9 of 11 from the field, doesn't miss a floater. That I can't remember the last time that dude did miss a floater. 5 boards, including an offensive one, had a dime too. I thought that he's continuing, and I think that James Harden, Kyrie Irving, everyone's starting to love Bruce, and how can you not?
You love the energy, and he just has an amazing like instinct and feel when to cut to the rim, because like you said, he does it in a way where he doesn't get in the way. And like, yo, a guard shot 9 of 11, like in no three, it's just like the efficiency is crazy. And like you said, that floater is just like kind of automatic. And I love the physicality. There was one drive in the second half, the game was kind of over, but he took it at somebody's chest on OKC and got the and one. I was just like, that's Bruce Brown. And like you said, I think his teammates really love him too, just with the energy and effort he plays with. There was a couple plays where he tipped a rebound. You know, he didn't get it every time, but one time he tipped it, it ended up going in DJ's hand. He got an easy dunk.
Yeah, I thought that the cut that where he was literally off screen, like he came from nowhere, and Kyrie Irving throws a really nice wraparound pass to him, and it shows, it's just like, oh, Kai's getting clogged here. He's in a tough space. Yep. I need to give him an option. And he's just... Really, really, just a good way of putting it. And I just think he's a really smart player. And, you know, you need smart players to just make heady plays. And Bruce Brown does that on a consistent basis. You know, he knows what his limitations are. You know, he only took the 1-3 tonight. But I just think he's always impacting the game. And I think the Nets are, what, 5-2 or 6-2 whenever he starts now. Obviously, his spot is going to be taken by Kevin Durant going forward. But we know that Bruce Brown is going to give us good minutes. And he's become a really strong part of this rotation.
Yeah, and he provides something that the Nets need. They need that energy, that hustle, that defense, and some of that just like the thing that you just can't measure. You know what I mean? And Bruce Brown has that, and he just provides that spark sometimes. And I'm going to say it, you know, there's going to be matchups where maybe Bruce Brown shouldn't play a ton because some of his limited offense and the way the teams are going to play the Nets, but there's going to be other games like tonight where he's a big reason they win.
And I think the reason why you get around with Bruce Brown, you know, one of the few guys on this roster that can't shoot the three ball, is because everyone else is such an offensive threat. It allows Bruce to go, you know what, I'm going to get some boards here. These guys miss a shot, I'm going to make sure I put it back or kick it out or get us an extra possession. Or I'm going to make sure I give them space by doing some smart cutting, give them some screens. And I think that just he just does all the little things, as you alluded to, Nick. All the intangibles that the superstars don't do or they shouldn't have to do, Bruce Brown fills in those gaps. And while he might get played off the floor in certain games and in certain rotations and matchups, I think that it's going to be hard to do so if you're pairing him, you know, with the offensive talent that the Nets do have. And, you know, alongside DeAndre Jordan, it's going to be tough. But if you have, you know, Jeff Green next to him or Kevin Durant next to him, I don't think that you're going to be taking him off the floor very often.
I think that's a great point, Jack. I think the lineups where you don't have DJ, it's a lot easier to play Bruce Brown. You know what I mean? If Jeff Green's stretching, you know, Reggie Perry's even stretching a little bit, I think you have space for Bruce Brown to operate down there, or maybe possibly another setter down the line, a Dwayne Dedman or some type of spacing big. You know, it could even unlock Bruce Brown a little bit more.
Definitely. And speaking of the bigs, Nick, DeAndre Jordan, 10 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 blocks, 5-7 from the field. What'd you think?
A little bit under, below average. You know, I think I think what he dropped, 2 or 3 lobs in this game. One, I think he didn't catch, but he went back up and got the finish on there. And then I think defensively, he looked the most confused out of almost anybody on the team. And he got himself caught in no man's land so many times. Like, the Nets were trying to blitz SGA, and I think that was by scheme. I think someone mentioned it after the game. Like, they wanted to make him uncomfortable. Or maybe it was the halftime report from the assistant coach. But they wanted to make him uncomfortable, and I get that. But then DJ, you have to, like, sprint back into your spot. You have to hustle back to your spot. And he just, like, would stand there and not know what to do, and then it would just allow OKC to get some type of open possession. So he needs to fix his stuff up, especially because he's supposed to be, quote-unquote, the defensive anchor.
Yeah, that's saying something. And look, that blitzing did work, especially in the latter parts of the game. It led to, like, you know, transition Reggie Perry layups and such. But, you know, on DeAndre, I just think that his defensive IQ has skyrocketed downwards. Like, he doesn't, whether he doesn't trust himself, whether he doesn't trust the scheme, it's just like, well, okay, the Nets have a switching scheme and switching principles. But is DJ part of that, or is he in his own, like, individual drop scheme? Is he going to get out to Al Horford on the perimeter and some of these guys that can really stretch him? Or, like,
he drops when he doesn't have to. Like, that's what was even more confusing, is there was plays where, like, the guy went over the screen and he was able to maintain some type of on-ball defense, and instead DJ goes to the front of the rim, and like you said, Jack, Al Horford, wide open three. And it's not like you're going to die if Al Horford shoots a ton of threes, but, like, he's still a good enough three-point shooter where you have to contest.
Yeah, I don't know if DeAndre Jordan is smart enough to anchor a championship defensive team at this point of his career. You know, I think his communication is good. I think he's a good leader. But I think, you know, when he is in actions, whether it's especially pick and roll actions, he is just getting found out. And he doesn't have the smarts of Jared Allen does, or any other, you know, quality average bigs in the league. And, you know, it's going to be an issue for the Brooklyn Nets. And obviously, you know, small ball is going to be probably what we run a lot of in closing points of the game. But it can't hurt to have Norvell Bell playing some cheeky minutes here or there, or another big if we happen to add one to the roster as a buyout candidate or another candidate, which will be added tomorrow likely by the time this podcast is out. So it'll be interesting because, look, in a game like tonight, it doesn't matter. But in, you know, when the games matter, other than Giannis Antetokounmpo, I don't know who else is DeAndre going to guard, because, you know, against Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, that's where Jared Allen had his best games. And I think DeAndre Jordan has a lot to prove. And now I think that we're seeing a level, some level of frustration from, you know, some of our superstars being like, come on, DJ, man.
I saw
James
Harden say something to him today.
And I saw Kevin Durant in a previous game as well do something similar. So I think that they are holding him accountable. I wonder whether he physically doesn't have the capabilities, or he mentally doesn't have the capabilities, or it's a combination of both. And look, 20 minutes is fine, because you give him 29 minutes to Jeff Green, 19 minutes to Reggie Perry here. Reggie Perry was better than him tonight. And, you know, most games this season, DJ's been better. And, you know, in the other games, it was clearly Jared Allen. It's a pretty glaring weakness for the Brooklyn Nets to have at least an average starting center. But if they can get that, it does solve a lot, because DeAndre Jordan is below average.
Yeah, his feet are just so slow. And I think that's really what it is, Jack, is like, he was such a great athlete that his recovery speed made up for so much. And now he just doesn't have that. So he's trying to kind of play like Marc Gasol, but he doesn't have the Marc Gasol basketball IQ on defense. You know what I mean? Marc Gasol gets away with it with not being a great athlete because he understands angles, positioning. And DeAndre, like I said, just kind of puts himself in terrible spots all the time. And I think there's still like some hope he can be better. Like, I think there's maybe like a tiny bit where maybe there'll be some improvement as the season progresses. Maybe it'll be like last year where he kind of plays himself into shape, but that's probably like my best hope, because I think it's really kind of the physical limitations that are kind of hurting him, because he's just slow.
He is. He's super slow. And, you know, in a team where we're switching and quick wits and quick decision-making mentally and physically is required, you know, it doesn't suit DeAndre Jordan. But
a team that's already kind of like not super fast in general, to be honest. Like, if you look at the starting lineup, you're like, Kyrie's probably the fastest guy. Joe Harris is an elite athlete. James Harden's not really an elite athlete in terms of speed. You know, Kevin Durant makes up for it because he has amazing length, but it's not like the Nets are the quickest team in the league. And I think that's when you lose such a great athlete like Jared Allen, it exposes so much more.
It does. It does. It goes down the line. Yeah, I think that's a decent point to make. And look, we saw one or two possessions of zone defense. I don't know if that becomes
pretty bad.
And maybe that becomes somewhat of a I think that we saw the principles in place tonight. We alluded to it earlier.
Yep.
I don't know whether zone suits DJ more. Like I mentioned, drop coverage is probably the best one. But even then, he just drops way too deep. Like he did.
And the problem with drop coverage with Kyrie is Kyrie gets like killed on screens too many times, where he's completely taken out of the play. So then it just becomes a free jump shot for probably a decent shooter. They have no one within 2 feet of any angle of them. You know what I mean? It's just like, okay, this is shooting practice. So I think that's kind of the part of the problem with playing drop, is because like Kyrie gets probably caught on screens more than anybody else in the Nets, especially because Caris LeVert's not here.
Yeah, and going up against, you know, some decent point guards and guards in the East, whether Bradley Beal or Kemba Walker, those guys, probably going to get found out. But yeah, I think we harp on the Nets defense a bit. I think we've dived deep into it quite a bit tonight, Nick. But anything else in tonight's game before, you know, I ask you about Steve Nash's comments about the roster overall?
No, I think, you know, this was just kind of a progress, a step forward, where you want to see an elite team take care of a lesser team and win in a comfortable way where it benefits you long term because you're getting rest. So I think this needs to be the goal in every time they face a bottom five, bottom 10 team. And obviously it's not going to happen every time, because they're professional basketball players. Guys are going to have hot nights. They're going to step up against the Nets. But I think they need to strive for this a lot moving forward against those bottom 10, bottom five teams.
Absolutely. You know, this is where you get momentum. This is where you figure out a lot of things.
And 4-game winning streak, right?
Yep, the second spot in the East. It's a good feeling to have right now after the Milwaukee Bucks lost to the New Orleans Pelicans. And look, you want to be have the best seed possible. Hopefully you don't get a Miami Heat team in like the seventh or eighth seed. Hopefully they get some stuff together, because they're not a good matchup. I think they might be one of the best eight seeds ever. It's like, you know, the Golden State Warriors in yesteryear against the Dallas Mavericks. But yeah, but the seeding will sort itself out. I think it's just about the form, the on-court performance, and just figuring a lot of the schemes and the intangibles that we've alluded to on this podcast and plenty of other previous ones, Nick. But in saying that, there is another roster open spot now that Norvell Powell likely plays against Washington. We'll have to wait and see. But in saying that, we heard Steve Nash speak about the extra roster spot that is available that has to be filled, I believe, by tomorrow. And he said this: I guess it's possible to sign one of our two-way guys, but I think we're probably looking to sign someone on a free agent deal. Nick, who is that someone?
I don't know. I mean, Norvell Pell was not on my radar, and Sean Marks signed him. So I can't say I really know where he's leaning in the situation, but
what
I do
agree. What position, Nick, do you want filled?
I think probably the most important position would be forward. Like, they need another power forward, small forward, whatever, because now that gives you more flexibility when you with Jeff Green to play more center minutes, and also gives you flexibility when Kevin Durant's out. Not only do the Nets miss Kevin Durant because he's, you know, arguably the best player in the league right now, but they miss him because he's literally one of the only forwards on their roster. So they need to get depth in that area. So I think that's the most important thing to sign tomorrow, especially if they believe in Pell. I think Pell's contract isn't guaranteed. It's not guaranteed until February 24th via Bobby Marks. So it's not even like he's locked in as a center. He's just center help right now. So I would think the other guy's going to be some type of forward. If it's a guard, yeah, I'll probably cry.
I mean, we're sure Marks signed plenty of them for the bubble. So hopefully he realizes where the roster composition is.
We already have
is.
Eight here.
Yeah, we got a lot of them. Hey, James Harden's power forward. Come on, man. What are you talking about? Bruce Brown played some center the other night against the Atlanta Hawks. But in saying that, you know, the three names that spring to mind for me, Nick, Trevor Ariza, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, those are probably the three ones. And up at the top of the list, I think Rondae Hollis-Jefferson would add a lot to this team as a forward version of Bruce Brown. We know what he brings to this team. I thought that his defense in Minnesota in the preseason, I'm just like, dude, this is the best defensive player on this team. And they just let him go. And obviously, we see how much they're suffering defensively and offensively for that matter. I thought he was good in Toronto as well. I thought he made some strides there after some early season struggles. And I thought that, you know, Nick Nurse's tutelage allowed him to really unlock himself a little bit there. And what he provided previously for the Brooklyn Nets, you know, he was probably our best defensive player. You know, we remember games against the Portland Trailblazers where he's come up clutch, you know, that bucket against the Sacramento Kings, you know, yeah, certainly sticks in my mind. You know, it'd be good because I think that a lot of, you know, quote unquote home, hardcore home Nets fans, you know, aren't as, you know, enamored with the superstar Scary Hours experience. I know you and I, you know, sometimes I felt that way initially, but now I'm certainly on board with Scary Hours aplenty. But bringing back an old favorite son in Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, I think would certainly add something to this team, not just on the court, but, you know, in terms of that intangible fan factor too.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think, you know, he's probably the most likely. I think Trevor Ariza is still technically under contract with OKC. But Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, like, he has literally no offense. Like, at least Rondae can finish a layup sometimes, you know what I mean? And he's an okay passer. I wouldn't rule out Rondae, like you said, defensively provide some energy. You're signing Ilyasova. He kind of looked a little bit washed with Milwaukee, maybe kick the tires on him. I don't even know if they can do, like, tryouts and see what these players are like right now because of COVID. So it's like usually you'd kind of want to see what they look like. Other than that, I'm just like, the forward class just isn't really strong. Obviously, this point of free agency, you're not going to have many guys available for you to really, like, be able to pop off. But any other names that you were thinking, like a dark horse, Jack?
No, look, I think we chatted about a couple of buyout candidates that Zach Harper mentioned on the previous podcast. So if you want to check that out, you know, check it out towards the end of the podcast around the sort of 35-minute, 40-minute mark. But yeah, I think that a forward is needed, Nick. You know, we need a backup. We need to lessen the minutes of Jeff Green, as Steve Nash alluded to. We need to lessen the minutes of Kevin Durant. You know, he's coming off an Achilles, and yes, he's doing historic things that I don't think that a lot of us are surprised about, because he is an historically great player. But it certainly can't help the rotation to have another guy who can play some rotation minutes at that forward spot and give you a little bit of flexibility. Because look, I wouldn't hate having Rondae as like a five as well. You know, he's played a little bit of five in his day. You know, sometimes
with Jeff Green, it wouldn't be that bad, because then the other one's shooting threes. You know what I mean?
Yep. Him alongside KD, him alongside Jeff Green. I'm becoming really, really enamored with the idea. Really sort of, come on, let's bring the hyphen back. I know you're a big hyphen fan, Nick, being a hyphen man yourself. So let's get the second hyphen back in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind it. And like you said, the energy off the court would be cool too. And I want to say maybe there's some type of connection to Kevin Durant, but I don't think so. I think maybe it's that they both shimmy at the free throw line. Maybe that's something. So, but we'll see what happens tomorrow. Anything else you want to touch on, Jack?
No, it's good to have a relatively comfortable win, Nick. And I unfortunately can't be on the next pod covering the Washington Wizards game, but you better believe that Nick's going to have that one covered with a special guest.
Yeah, we got a Joe coming in, and he told me that he's going to provide a lot of Joe Harris content to keep the vibes on point.
Thank God. That's why we have Joe as a regular guest on this podcast.
Well, Jack, always a pleasure. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. You can catch us on all streaming platforms.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.